From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our first connection this hour was made last summer when the British actor Idris Elba's name surfaced as a possible contender to play James Bond. Of course, the legendary 007 has always been played by a white male, but Elba is a popular actor who's expressed interest in the role. Almost immediately, though, some backlash occurred along racial lines. Writers and fans on social media demanded that James Bond never be anything but a white guy. Former Bond actor Pierce Brosnan said, quote, "He'll be male, and he'll be white." And that raises an interesting question. Why is it that so many lead roles in film go to white males? The upcoming Oscars are going to be almost exclusively white. Later this month, we'll wade into that controversy. But this hour, we turn our attention to a local theater fest aimed at the African-American community. Specifically, Rochester has a number of black theater companies that you might never have heard of. So the upcoming Bronze Theater Collective will present performances from local companies. It's 1 week away. The organizers want the entire community to know that there is black talent, both in these black companies, but also available to work in any production. Let me introduce my guests for the hour, and they include David Taylor, a playwright and filmmaker who's had plays performed at the Rochester Fringe Fest, the Baobab Cultural Center, the Muck, of course, and in various locations in New York City. David, great to have you here. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you very much.
Also here is Grace Flores, a playwright. Her theater company is called Rapier. And she's got a play in the Bronze Collective Theater Fest called The Waiting Room. We'll be talking about that. Grace, welcome.
Hello.
And tell us what Rapier stands for, by the way.
Rochester's Advanced Performers Interpreting Everyday Realities.
All right, very good. Well, thank you for being here. Reuben Tapp, one of the founders of the festival, is here. Reuben, welcome to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Kevin Hicks is here. Kevin has been, I think fair to say, doing some of the public relations work. We see Kevin's name in a lot of different places around town, and it's great to have you back here, Kevin.
Thank you very much.
All right, so Kevin, back in the late summer, the fall, we talked about Sankofa, and this is the Bronze Collective Fest. And back when we talked about Sankofa, you said watch out for a very important, a big event coming up here in mid-late winter. And here we are now. But what's the difference between what happened with Sankofa and what's happening with Bronze Collective?
Okay. Well, first, let me just quickly give the dates for this Bronze Collective Theater Fest, which is coming up February 22nd to the 28th at the Muck. The difference between them is the Sankofa Fest is for established and emerging playwrights, but in particular, the emerging playwright, they can get some mentorship, and they don't have to be associated with a theater company, whereas this, the Bronze Collective Theater Fest, features theater companies here in Rochester, African-American theater companies. So you're going to be getting a sampling of what each of them offer during the year.
And there's a number of them. And that's when we talk about this rich arts community, I think, Kevin, fair to say, some of our audience may have heard of some, but not all. They may not be aware of all the different possibilities out there. So this kind of brings it together, right?
Right. There's at least 10, probably more than 10, black theater companies here in Rochester.
And the tagline under where I see Bronze Collective Theater Fest is when art is a shield and a weapon. And Reuben, I'm gonna make you explain what that is there. As one of the co-founders, but I laugh. But honestly, that's an interesting, it's a provocative idea. So tell me about what you think that means.
Well, didn't know you were gonna ask me that question, but I remember when I was kind of coming up with it, there was a study that mentioned about how one of the most important ways to combat racism was to give the persons a rich understanding of their history. And so what art, and a lot of times what art ends up being is it ends up being a way for one generation to communicate to another generation, not in as much as a didactic way, but in a more organic way. So everyone is enjoying it as opposed to being preached to.
I think that's well said. And again, as Kevin said, the 22nd through the 28th, the full week of shows at the Muck every night at 7:30, with the exception of the finale, I think. Right, Kevin?
Right, which will be at 2 p.m. at the Muck. And people can go online at muccc.org, and you can get tickets there and also more information about the festival. And there's also tickets are $15 in advance, $20 at the door, and there's also a theater pass for the week, which is $49.95, best deal in town.
All right. Well, Grace Flora is a playwright whose work for the Bronze Collective Theater Fest is called The Waiting Room. And The Waiting Room is about what, Grace?
The Waiting Room is my idea about life. To me, life is one big waiting room. We're born, we wait, we die. It's what you do in the middle. So I took that idea and literally made The Waiting Room and put a lot of different people from different backgrounds, different stories, and kind of like the movie Crash, they crash, and you'll figure out all the pieces and how they fit together in the end.
Are there any other sort of interlocking themes that you're trying to bring to the audience in The Waiting Room?
Yes. What if God were one of us? We're the first without shall be last, and the last shall be first.
Well, so you're going to make us think a little bit.
Yeah, I'm going to make you think a lot.
You think God is one of us, Grace?
I know God is one of us.
Okay. Well,
probably not you, but maybe Kevin.
That's the first time. Definitely not me. I got you there.
But I believe that God could be one of us, and we never know who God is or where God is. If God decides to embody someone, I think a lot of people would, you know, need to get their stuff together.
How long have you been writing?
Oh, I was just talking about that. I wrote my first poems almost 8 years ago. Okay. And from my first poem, I started doing open mics, and then I did a play, and then I did another play. So not long at all.
And why do it? What about the medium here inspires you? What do you get out of this process?
Well, my father was Joe Flores. He was a graphic artist, and he passed recently. And as I got older and he got older, he told me I need to find my niche. And writing for myself wasn't good enough. It's like the Beatitudes, where Christ talked about talents and the master giving the servants talents and what the servants did with those talents. Meant everything. So I couldn't squander my talents anymore. And my talent happened to be writing.
What is it like for you to see the work that you create performed?
It means a lot, but more so I'm my purpose is to see young people utilize their talents. Use their talents in a positive way. My goal in life, my mission is I live by the ideology. I can't say the word.
The ideology.
The ideology that it's going to take a creative mind to heal this destructive force, and there are destructive forces in this world. So we're all these creative people. I believe we're here to heal the world.
Well, Grace's work is called The Waiting Room, and it's first up. It's Monday, February 22nd, at the Muck, 7:30. And then you have a long list of performances. And I want to talk to David Taylor, who's a playwright, a filmmaker. My guess is the first thing you wrote was a little more than 8 years ago. I don't know, though.
Yeah.
It goes back a little more.
Yeah. I started writing in, I'd say, 1983. Failed English in college.
You failed English in college?
Yeah, I hated writing. Hated writing.
I mean, failed it or just got like a C?
Failed and had to take it again. That was one of my things. And I said, I'm never going to write anything. But it wasn't until I got out of, went to Howard University, came out in 82, and was hired right by ABC Television right away, and went right to New York. And I remember I was watching Entertainment Tonight one night, and Richard Pryor came on with Jim Brown, talking about starting Indigo Productions. That was their production company. And a reporter asked Richard Pryor, what stories are you looking for? Who are you looking to get stories from? He said, probably somebody who's watching right now. And I went, whoa.
That's me.
Well, let me start writing. So I started writing by hand. I wrote my first script by hand.
By hand.
And it was about the Apollo Theater and a Michael Jackson, Eddie Murphy type character saving the Apollo Theater from being turned into condos. And they bring all the stars back to put on a massive show. So from then, I got together with some college friends of mine, and I had written a story called The Deprogrammer. And we turned it into a short film called The Session that got played on PBS in New York and around the country, a lot of colleges and stuff like that. We started a film production company, and I had worked with Spike Lee on She's Gotta Have It and School Days and some other films. And some people told Spike, you should make this movie into a feature. So he did. And so my movie got made by Spike Lee as executive producer in 1994, called The Drop Squad, with Eric LaSalle and Ving Rhames, and Bonnie Curtis Hall, Casey Lemons, a bunch of people like that. And I had kept writing and tried to pitch one thing, a script called Forever and Ever that I wrote about blood brothers. And it didn't go well. It just didn't go well. So I said, I'm not going to pitch anymore. So I didn't, but I kept writing. So I built up a library of about like 10 feature film scripts. I've got my first book getting ready to come out at the end of the month called Dream Think, which is a series of short stories and short scripts, kind of Twilight Zone-y, Stephen King-ish type stories. I am also turning these stories into radio dramas. I have talked to Irene Fink, and pitched her that idea, and she was going to give it to somebody here at NPR.
So you've never stopped working, it sounds like.
No, I like to work. I like to work. Mm-hmm. I have had some issues health-wise, but I've always said my health is not going to get away getting things done. I believe if I'm not finishing a project, I'm marketing myself anywhere, any way, to anybody. I really don't care. I think that's the most important thing to do in life is to keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. You have to in order to get ahead and to be happy.
Evan, I think one of the things also, David is going to be a part on this program. We've got one afternoon of filmmakers. So there's a relationship in terms of films and playwrights. A number of our Black playwrights have had their work turned into film and sometimes vice versa. So that's why we thought that it was good to include David and also Shabaka Muasor there, too. And it also gives us a little more diversity in terms of some people, maybe they're into film and they're not quite ready for plays, so we can kind of reel them in.
And that's on Sunday, February 28th.
Correct.
At 2 o'clock at the Muck.
Mm-hmm.
For Rochester's African American Filmmakers. So, David, you'll get to tell some of the stories that you're telling now, but also I think, I think probably be the ringleader of an important discussion there. What do you make of that afternoon?
I think it's going to be quite interesting. I'm good friends with Shabaka. I wound up moving back to Rochester in 2009 and met a guy named David Shakes, who is kind of a major actor, director around town.
And also one of the original four producers.
Yes. And he turned me on first to Sankofa, which I did last year, mm-hmm. and also the Fringe Festival. In fact, I spoke to you mm-hmm. that when you had the Fringe Festival on. And and then he turned me on to Sankofa and also the Bronze Collective last year, where I showed some short films that I made.
Get closer to that mic.
For
a guy who loves publicity, you got to get close to that microphone, David.
Absolutely. I have a YouTube channel that has about 20 things on it, and that from 1 minute to 6 minutes. Some of them are spoofs on commercials. Some of them are the problems with a Black man getting a cab in New York City. Another thing is we did some HBO PSAs on anti-violence. I did one with Queen Latifah and some others. And I'll be showing some of these this year. And I don't believe in writing in one genre, and whatever my idea is. I think what's changed over the last like 10 or 15 years is that Now there are many more outlets for material. TV is screaming for content. Mm-hmm. And all you do is got to finish something, and you'll get it played somewhere. Now, there's a lot of garbage out there.
There's a lot of competition.
There's a lot of competition, too. However, if you have something with a twist and something that's a little different, The Sopranos, Breaking Bad, Walking Dead, something like that, you can step out and be seen. I think right now that now the new places to go are Netflix, Amazon Studios, Google. They're doing stuff now.
And there's fewer rules with that, right?
Completely. You can do anything. There's no ratings. There's no this. There's no that. You can do a series. You can do... Now there are podcasts. You can do things like that. All you do is need to finish an idea. You know, and I would say to anybody who's listening right now is that if you got a thought, write it down. You know, if you ask me how much I write per day, it's not like I'm writing constantly. I do go through jags where I write all the time. But now I post in my Facebook. I have a blog. I write in that. I write in my journal. Then I'm maybe writing a script, rewrite a script, go back and look at something I wrote a long time ago and relook at it. And rewrite it again. But now you can get stuff done. Everyone's a director now.
Is it too much?
Good question. No, because I think what we're waiting for is with people we had, Oscar Michaud, Melvin Van Peebles, Gordon Parks, and Spike Lee. We're waiting for somebody else to come along. That window's open. And we're waiting for somebody else to fill that window. And it could be anybody now. With the way technology, we can do everything in your home now. Shooting, editing, anything. And you can get it done.
Now, when I hear your diversity of ups and downs in your own career,
mm-hmm.
and you seem, by the way, totally resilient to... You know, to struggle. I don't know if I'm just over interpreting David, but
no,
you're somebody who, like you said, you've worked with Spike Lee.
Yes.
And you've been right there at the top.
Yes.
And you've also written some things that didn't have the success that you thought they could.
Yes.
So how do you deal with that?
Well, what I decided a long time ago was to build a library of material. I've got, like, this is my first book I got coming out called Dream Think, and I've got two more books ready to go. I'm going to release a book every 2 months. I've got some short films I want to try to shoot, some plays that I want to try to do.
And it doesn't matter to you that some may hit and some may miss?
No, I don't care.
Doesn't matter.
As long as I get them out there. You know, and I don't care what people think about what I write either.
See, that's the thing.
I don't.
I remember talking to a friend years ago when I was thinking about book writing, and he said, you know, if it's a flop, who cares? Nobody read it. So you don't have to worry about that.
Well,
Is that good advice?
No, well, I think one of the problems is that, okay, I do say finish something, and that's what place to start. But the next thing you've got to do is market it. You've got to let people know what's out there. So then you start to get responses and reflections on what you wrote. And that's most important because then you decide whether to change it or not. Personally, there's two things that I kind of believe in. One's maybe a little rude, but when I'm writing, when I'm working like I am right now, I don't like reading or going to movies or seeing other people's plays or any reading of the books or anything like that. I just kind of want to concentrate what I'm doing. The other thing is that I do like meeting other artists, like I am doing with the Bronze Collective, and Sankofa and The Fringe and people like that, because I've just been working with a lot of people here in Rochester, but meeting people like Grace and Ruben and Kevin are allowing me to meet other people. Like I'll be talking at MCC on the 22nd at the drama department, and I want to meet some other actors, younger actors, white, black, it doesn't matter to me. I think the way I do write is that, like, my book, Dream Thing, isn't urban fiction. It's not at all. It's fantasy, it's science fiction, it's horror, it's a little bit of everything. And I just think that we can do more. There's nothing wrong with urban fiction. We need it. But there's more stories out there that we haven't seen black people in, or Hispanic, or Haitian, or Asian, or whatever it might be, that they can play anything. And those are the stories I want to put out.
Well, let me turn to Ruben Tapp, one of the founders of the Bronze Collective Festival, because, look, you got to be a little careful as the white guy in the room to overgeneralize. But let me say that when I meet black artists in this town, theater, writers, you know, we've had groups of writers whose work, you know, they may struggle to find an audience. They don't all have sort of the relentless promotional energy that David has. and we laugh at that, but I think in many ways I admire that about David, because you have to be a little bit immune to the ups and downs, and you have to be willing to put yourself out there. And sometimes people just, you know, have struggled to find an audience. Is that part of what Bronze Collective is about here? Is about pulling people in and giving them a chance to be seen, to be heard, for the community to see it?
Yes, I would say yes. You probably hit it right on the head. Mm-hmm. One of the main things that, as far as being an artist, and I think they're starting to teach this now in a lot of the schools, is you have to be an entrepreneur. So even if you're the best actor or you're the best writer or whatever like this, you have to basically create a following before you get an agent and things of this sort.
And not everybody loves doing that, you know?
Right,
it's not natural for some people.
Right, but it's a part of the process. And so once you get an agent or whoever, you still have to keep doing the same thing. So with the Bronze Collective, what we were wanting to do was we were wanting to create a group of people who were, who, for one, create a network of people. So it's like, I need an actor here, or I need a stagehand or something like that. The other aspect was to market it, so similar to what, you know, as far as you were referring to, as far as David, so that if you have a group of people, it's easier to market things based upon resources as opposed to you yourself. So if everyone is working together, it makes it a lot easier. So that's kind of a consensus or synergy mm-hmm. that we were trying to build.
Now, this is second annual for this festival. Yeah?
Correct. Right. And the first year, there was a huge snowstorm, but we still had a lot of people coming out.
Well, this year we haven't had any snow this winter at all. So hopefully the week of February 22nd through the 28th at the Muck is all free and clear. It's the Bronze Collective Theater Fest. We've talked about Grace's work, The Waiting Room. We've talked about David's work and the panel and the afternoon there, the afternoon soiree with Rochester's African-American filmmakers that David will be a part of. Can you take me through a little bit, Ruben, some of the rest of the schedule and some of the things that stand out to you that we'll be seeing at Bronze Collective?
So I would say that, so we have Grace Flores with The Waiting Room.
Yep.
She's been writing since she was 7 years, but she's newer to the stage. But she has a big following in the Rochester area, so a lot of people are really interested in kind of what she's doing. And we also have Melanie Silas. She's done a few stage plays throughout, as well as she has these huge conferences. I think she has a conference coming up with Maggie.
She's
Anderson.
A powerhouse. She's an incredible woman. She's been on this program before.
Mm-hmm, And we have Raina, who has been doing spoken word for some time, and both of them are connecting together. So they are connecting together for one night, which is great, which is what we want to do. It's great when people work together for a similar ends, which is, you know, kind of the nexus of the Bronze Collective.
Mm-hmm.
Monologues in Clarissa Street, which is Karen Culley. Now she's been writing for some time, but it's just now that her project is coming to flourish, and that's going to be great. Now Robert Ricks, I believe his is going to have younger people in it. So that is one component where you're going to have Grace Flores has some of her has some younger people in hers, but Robert Ricks has some younger people. So it's good because it ends up being intergenerational. Because if you only have one generation doing something, then things die. It's the same thing you see in churches. If you only have older people who are trying to communicate your values to, and it's only to the same generation, then what happens after that generation? There's a void. That's
true in public radio audiences, too.
Oh, goodness.
So and then moving on with Quava, which they're doing Fannie Lou Hamer, which is a great icon during the civil rights, and as well as a lot of people haven't even heard about it. So that's going to be really, really wonderful. And Amani Theater, that's a big – I'm sorry.
Oh, I want to jump in just with the story of Fannie Lou Hamer just because that's not a name – that I've seen in most history books. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just the short description, again, it's called Aquaba, the Heritage Associates doing Fannie Lou Hamer. The 1960s, mm-hmm. Hamer's efforts were key in getting voting rights. Mm-hmm. That's not a story most Americans, I think, have heard. It's right. a great story mm-hmm. to tell.
Right. And a lot of people were trying to find persons besides the go-to people, MLK, Malcolm X, Rosa Parks. So here is one that would be great, a great family show. Come on down. That would be perfect. And that's Friday the 26th.
Friday the 26th at the Muck. Again, all shows at 7:30 except for the last day. So, all right, keep going.
And we have Michael Akinjohn, who's doing with the Amani Theater Ensemble. And a lot of things are going on great with that. So it's 25 years of his theatrical journey. He's been doing shows and in the Rochester area. As a matter of fact, when I moved here, that was one of the first theaters that I had gone to go see. I think they were doing something. And then we were back to David Taylor and Chewbacca for film. So we have a number of different aspects of theater. We have storytelling. We have reading. We have spoken word. We have plays. We also have youth doing things. So it's like a restaurant you go to. It's a new restaurant. You've never seen all these different things, but you get a sampling of everything. So that is kind of what we want to do. There were some other ones we want probably we'll bring in next year, some comedy and some other stuff. But this is a great platform because if people buy the week pass, they are able to sample a little bit of everything. And so especially for those who are like, I didn't even know that there was a black theater in, you know, a group, a following for black theater. And I'm always looking for black actors. So I didn't even know that there, you know, there's some out there or something like that. So it's like, well, here you go. Here you go. Come and look. Take a look. You can find out. You might not like this night, but you don't like this night. So you get a good tasting of all the different nights.
Kevin, you made a reference to public broadcasting, and the other night public broadcasting had a documentary on August Wilson, so a lot of people here in Rochester will know him through the series that Jiva Theater did, but we also want people through this festival to know that there are up-and-coming August Wilsons, and know the person that they see here in Rochester, they could go on and you know, you would have seen them start right here.
Well, I just want to say thank you, Kevin.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for this.
Well, and thank you, Kevin. And in an effort to get a little self-promotion in there, I want to let you know that I'm also a spoken word artist. The play is spoken word based. They say Shakespearean. I also have a singer in it. I also have a band.
There you go.
And I also have kids. So Monday night, come out and you only get a little bit of the rest of the week. Thank you.
And let me just, before we wrap up, just say a couple of things here. I think the timing of this, well, first of all, it's Black History Month. But second of all, we're about to have an Oscars that is really white. Mm-hmm. And I know this country's been talking about that, and good. The country needs to talk about that. And later this month, but as we preview the Oscars with Jack Garner, we're going to explore that a little bit more as well, because I think there's some real problems there, really legitimate problems. And there's also a problem, you know, you heard Ruben mention the fact that when you put a festival like this together, playwrights locally might not be aware that there's this talent pool to draw from. Mm-hmm. I need this actor, I need that. But sometimes we need to just get over some roles. You know, we assume a role is white. Idris Elba would be a great Bond. Mm. All right, and like I just can't believe how much silly controversy comes over even the idea that Bond could be black.
And the themes that we're having as part of this universal themes that people, you know, you do not have to be black to come out to this festival.
Just as we said at Sankofa, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, so before I let Kevin go here again, the details starting Monday, February 22nd, and it's Grace Flores' work, The Waiting Room, to kick it off. At the Muck. The Muck is on Atlantic Avenue, by the way, not far from Starry Nights. It's a great location, intimate space, really neat place to see a show. And it's all week long, every night there, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30, and then Sunday, the 28th of February, from 2 to 4. So there's your schedule. And Kevin, again, if they want to see more of the capsules on individual performances, they can find it where?
Sure, right at the website, muck, muccc.org. $15 in advance, $20 at the door, $49.95 for a theater pass. And the theater pass is available only at Moodmakers Books. So you need to go there to get the theater pass.
And what's the goal? 5 years, 10 years from now, this theater festival is going to be doing what, Kevin?
I would really like to see it where this theater festival is sending people to the National Black Theater Festival in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, which is every 2 years, that we will have people that will be showcasing their work there.
Kevin Hicks doing some publicity work, but he's sort of the man with many hats in town, helping out here with the Bronze Collective Theater Fest. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for telling us all about it here. Ruben Tapp, one of the founders of the festival, good luck this year, and thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.
David Taylor, I don't have to wish you luck. I know I'm going to hear from you.
Well, I did want to say when my first job in television was here. At WXXR.
Is there anywhere you haven't been?
I've been around.
David's a playwright and filmmaker, and you'll see him out of the festival. And Grace Flores, playwright. Her theater company is called Rapier, and her work is called The Waiting Room. Good luck with the show. Thanks for telling your story as well, Grace.
Thank you.